Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Andy Murray, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
It's a bonkers sport, were the words that Grand Matt just mentioned to us here. What time have we got at the moment? We've got 12:46 a.m., 12:45 in the morning, and Johanna Konta and Garbiñe Muguruza have just taken to the court for their second round match, which is faintly ridiculous. And it is the latest start ever to a match at the Australian Open here. Catherine Whittaker is here, just about, and Grant Matt is here, just about, and we are sitting here in an almost deserted media cafe to talk about tennis here on the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph.
It's 12:46 a.m.
Yes.
In the words of Alan Partridge.
It's actually been a fun day.
Yeah, I feel like
it has been a very fun day. Lots going on.
Up with the Partridge.
So, highlights. What's been going on today? Where do we start?
What do you mean by today? Let's start by clarifying that.
Yes, yesterday. Yesterday. Yes, I'm trying to think what matches I've seen. Well,
Can I emphasise the situation by saying David's grown a beard since I last saw him? I mean, like, for real.
Yeah, I mean, anybody who knows me knows that I don't really grow beards. Not out of a wish not to, just an inability to. However, it has been so long today that,
I saw you at dinner as well. You didn't have a beard at dinner.
No, well, I've been working on it.
How many times have you entered here today, David? Have you entered the grounds?
Oh, certainly more than once, yes. Both Grand Matt and I arrived to Melbourne Park and promptly turned round and went back home because we'd, in his case, forgotten his laptop, in my case, forgotten my pass. And so, yeah, got my exercise in there. And whilst all this was going on, Victoria Kuzmova's Australian Open came to an end. Your pick, Matt, for the quarterfinals didn't quite get that far. What happened?
She's out. So I turned up without my laptop, legged it back to my hotel, got back to Rod Laver.
Can only be described as the world's most disgusting weather conditions imaginable.
Horribly sweaty.
It's a humid
mess
day, isn't it?
When I got back.
We don't want to moan too much.
Well, yesterday was a humid day.
Yeah. Today could be fine.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I got back, and she was doing perfectly well when I wasn't there. I was listening on the radio, got back.
She got to 4-all first set, didn't
she?
It was all looking like...
Three break points, not consecutively, but she had three, lost them all. So I saw that, and then so inevitably lost serve, and then the second set was not really a contest.
Showed promise, though, Matt, I would say.
There was promise. There's a blog coming later. About said promise.
And without, you know, I don't think there's going to be any crowing here because both of us had, I think, Svitolina in our quarters, but with absolutely no conviction. She surprised me with her form here.
I had plenty of conviction
about
that.
Did you? I didn't.
Okay.
Yes, Svitolina.
Her form is surprising.
Is playing better than I thought she would.
Yeah.
With Gael Monfils in her box.
Yeah, didn't like being
that
asked about it though, did she?
Awkward.
What did you think about that, Catherine? Was that a legitimate question or not? Because
that's really tricky.
I know. And actually, Russell Fuller and myself have just been discussing this. We didn't really know where we stood on it.
Yeah, I mean, on one hand, you could say, look, well, if you're going to sit in their box, then you know that that's public. You know you're going to be picked up on cameras. That therefore, you are choosing to put that relationship on the public domain. But equally, we see where you spit that box is public domain, but for them that's just where we get our tickets, that's where we put our loved ones, and what happens from that point on sort of is out of our hands. I think that it's my unscientific assessment of it which is not as sort of crisp and clean cut as I would like, is that I think it's okay to sensitively ask about it in a press conference, but putting her on the spot about it in an on-court interview, which generally tends to be all fluffy and you know, I think that was a bit
tough. As you say, all fluffy. It's not like he was asking for personal details. All he did actually was draw attention to the fact that he was there.
But equally, they'd never actually confirmed before that they're a couple. They'd never confirmed, yes, we're a couple, and that's something that we're happy to talk about. Tennis couples are.
But he didn't ask. He didn't say, oh, your boyfriend, Gael Monfils, was in the box. He said he was there.
He was fishing a bit.
Can you confirm that you're a couple?
He didn't say that.
That was the implication.
He didn't say that.
That was absolutely the implication of the question.
She went quiet because she felt awkward about it.
Well, what was the question then?
I think it was something like saying you've got somebody in your box who we all know, or we haven't seen before.
David.
No, yeah, I understand the point, but I mean, well, what do you expect if you're going to have one of the world's best players?
I think it's reasonable to be
who's never been there before
to be put on the spot. As I've said, I don't think it's a clean-cut thing. Mm. I just think being put on the spot about it like that in a situation where you have to just sort of go along with things and be jolly, we've you don't really have the option to get uppity about stuff and say, you can't, in that situation, in a press conference, you can say, look, that's my personal life, I'd rather not comment. You can't really do that one of those on-court interviews.
Point. Yeah, I take that point. Russell asked me in commentary, would I have asked that? And I said, thing is, here, that is kind of the way things happen on Australian TV. That does happen. I remember Sam Smith telling me that she'd had pressure put on her to ask a certain question about a player's, boyfriend, girlfriend. I can't remember what it was. And that is kind of what's expected here. For me, I don't feel particularly comfortable with it. I must say, it's not my line of questioning. I thought she was perhaps a little naive not to expect any reference to the fact that Gael Monfils is sitting in her player box. I knew nothing of their relationship. It's none of my business. But he is very well known, and he was there.
I don't think she necessarily was not expecting it. Not expecting it and not feeling comfortable with it are two different things. Mm. I don't know. She might have been blindsided by it, in which case, yeah, but, you know, she'd never been in that situation before.
I don't feel hugely strongly about it either way. She played very well.
She played really well. She was even better
than Kuzmova.
You've got to be good to beat... I've got her first name, Kuzmova.
Yeah, well, it's 48 in the world. She's going places. She's 20 years old. I have to say, I did think, when I watched the first set, I thought, cool, she has got a game.
She beat Sabalenka last year.
Yeah.
April.
She's definitely got something. Big serve, good forehand. She's got one of those sort of slingshot forehands that the ball just whooshes off the string.
When she's got time, she's very dangerous.
Yeah.
I'd like to see her play on clay, actually.
Yes. No, you could imagine
you're
that.
You're
going to
see her play everywhere, Matt.
Shape of shot. Then we had the classic, didn't we, of Stan Wawrinka against Milos Raonic. It was basically like being transported back 3 years to when they played here 3 years ago. Very similar match.
Yeah.
And Raonic went in four sets in the end,
four tie breaks.
Yes.
Four tie break sets. And I don't know about you, but I was thinking, as it was nearing the conclusion of the fourth set, I was thinking, I really don't want this to be decided by a fifth set super bolter breaker.
Oh, really? Why?
Because we'd already had breakers. It felt like, you've had what would have been, you know, two tiebreakers each. Now let's see who can break serve to really get the business done. But that didn't happen, and this conversation turns out to be irrelevant. So, first and foremost, the joy of Goran Ivanišević, that Ivanišević Cam has returned to all our lives, which is great. Reaction Cam on Goran is one of the joys of tennis.
Yeah.
It's great to see both of them back and really properly back.
It was like no time had passed at all.
Absolutely.
The way they're playing.
Brownich, the guts on him, really. I didn't think he had that confidence in them. Where's he got that confidence from?
Well,
he's not really.
You just mentioned him.
Maybe Goran.
I think Goran just... He knows how to deal with these guys. And I think one of the problems when he was coaching Thomas Burdick is Burdick was not open to Goran's methods. He'd hired him, and yet he wasn't doing what he asked him to do, because I think he was so programmed into what he has done for so long. And I can kind of understand that. If you think you've got 13 years of programming to play a certain way and to not let the shackles go... Whereas with Cilic just did what he was told, really. And look what happened. And now I think Raonic, although he's a more analytical character, I think he's more convinced by the similarities of the game and is happy to just, yeah.
And that's to his credit, if he's been sort of malleable in that way. Because he gave that quote, didn't he, that he's the CEO of Milos Raonic Tennis, which makes me sort of shiver just thinking about that. But
actually thinking about sort of taking away his comments, just thinking about the track record, it kind of, he's done himself a disservice with that comment, hasn't he? Because he was very malleable when John McEnroe came on board.
Yeah.
And that was more about sort of body language and demeanour and attitude on the court. He totally took all of that on board and embraced it and kind of changed his whole being. And now here he is, you know, drilling backhands down the line that I didn't know and was part of his repertoire.
And his volleying was a complete revelation.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life, and of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
Yeah, his volleying was a total revelation, and I mean, nothing will make Goran Ivanišević prouder than bringing the serve and volleyer, or at the very least the volleyer, out of somebody, I think. And I mean, it was evident how proud he was today. I'm sure Magnus Norman was pretty proud of Stan Wawrinka as well.
Stan said in Swiss press, I believe, that he was sad but wasn't disappointed at all because he'd played so well and kind of feels like he's back now. I think even though he's only got to the second round, he was working
that could, it could have been a quarter or semi-final. It could have been a semi-final.
They were both screwed over by that draw because really they were playing tennis worthy of the second week.
Especially
Wawrinka in that first set tiebreak where he wrestled control, took over with his backhand.
Yeah, I know David had a few things to say about the how he described it as as he hit some backhands in that second set tiebreak that made you feel glad to be alive.
Yes.
And the reason David is not describing that himself, by the way, is because there's a trail of dust in our midst where he has sprinted to the Five Live commentary box because it is a little after 1 a.m. and Garbini Muguruza is serving for the first set 5-4, 15-all against Johanna Konta on the Margaret Court Arena, and David has to commentate on the second set, which is a pretty extraordinary effort. The reason that it's 1:11 a.m. and they are not even completed with the first set is, well, I mean, there's a combination of factors, let's put it that way. What are we? Margaret Court Arena. Well, I mean, the Rod Laver Arena isn't long finished. Novak Djokovic coming into press shortly, I think. He was just announced. And the reason that court was so long delayed is not only because of Raonic and Wawrinka going for hours, but also because of Simona Halep and Sofia/Sonia Kenin, who, Matt, it turns out, are the same person.
They are the same person. Yes, you sent a message saying, has anyone just realised that Sofia and Sonia Kenin are the same person?
I mean, I hadn't sort of fully formulated a thought about there being two Kenins,
with
but equally
similar names.
Yeah, but equally, apparently her official name is Sofia. That's what she's in the WTA media guide, but she likes to go by Sonia for reasons unknown.
Yes,
currently.
I think people on Twitter I saw were referring to her as Sonia. So that's
right. I mean, good luck to her.
Yeah.
Frankly, she plays tennis well enough to go by whatever name she likes. It's not 100% unexpected, is it? She's the champion from Hobart. She's as I said yesterday, she's in that sort of Lauren Davis gutsy,
feisty
gal mould. And yeah, the world number one found herself in an almost inevitable feeling scrap after leading
6-4, 3-love, I think.
6-4, 3-love, echoes of French Open final 2017, dare I say, except that she won this one in the end.
Yeah, and Kenin plays a style of tennis that, when Halep's not at her best, I feel they have quite similar game styles. I think if Halep was really on it, she would have more. And
how not on it is Halep?
Well, by her own admission, she's undercooked. And
undercooked in terms of matches, though, or is she carrying a bit of an injury?
I think she said she had a bit of an injury. She picked up an injury today.
Yeah, where? To what body part? She seems to be being vague. Again, sort of after that first round victory, she was delighted, but she was talking about, you know, being tired, and she was referring to her body and that being a factor more than I would expect.
And
from
even in her pre-tournament press, she said that she was kind of over the back trouble that she had at the end of last year, but you know, she said something like, "Oh, but you never know; it can go at any moment," which wasn't exactly confidence. But I must say, I was impressed with the way she came through that deciding set from a breakdown. It was almost as though all the influence of Darren Cahill is kind of programmed in her now. She knows better what to do and how to deal with it and how to fight and how to not get too negative.
Yeah, because she came into this tournament saying incredibly openly, really, yeah, I mean, I'd still love to be working with Darren. I really need a coach. And ideally, I'd like Darren to come back, but if it's not Darren, I need somebody.
Well, yeah, she said you can't do it at this level without a coach.
Yeah, which is really fascinating. Mm. But I wonder if maybe she's sort of... look, I'm not saying she's going to win the tournament. She's still...
She's got a murderer's row of a draw.
Horrible draw remains. I still believe she's going to lose to Serena Williams, if not Venus Williams before that. but surely there is some reason, at least already, for her to believe that she might be able to go it alone.
I think the biggest concern will be whether she can do it physically.
Yeah, a murderous draw.
Yes.
I dare you to go into a press conference and say that. So that match finished at what, 8 8:40?
Yeah, something like that. 8:40 p.m.
And then, of course, there's this sort of, it takes a half-hour period minimum for them to get all of the day session people out. And then you can see on the monitors...
people frantically cleaning.
Yeah. Oh, bless them. Give those people a bonus or a pay rise or something, because my goodness me, you've never seen people collect litter so quickly. It was, I thought I was watching a time-lapse video, but actually it was real human beings working in real time to clean the litter from the Rod Laver Arena in order to pave the way for Serena Williams against Eugenie Bouchard, which is a match that we've all been picking up all day. And then actually when it came to it, I ended up not seeing a single ball struck. So I'm putting you on the spot here, Matt, and hoping that you saw some of it.
I saw some. And what I saw, Serena was very impressive.
And 2-2, was it?
Yeah. And I was thinking, oh God, why didn't I pick Serena to win the title?
She looks. Did you pick to win the
Kerber
title?
Which Kerber. I'm still happy with that.
She's looked all right.
Pick. Yeah. But honestly, Serena was in that kind of mood where she thought,
yeah. Maybe it's the anorak.
There had been a bit of chatter, hadn't there, about this match potentially being a banana skin. But
I chatted to Michael Joyce yesterday, and I keep getting the wool pulled over my eyes, yeah, by Kyrgios and Grigor Dimitrov and Michael Joyce, and I don't know. He just made me feel like things are a bit different with Eugenie Bouchard now, and I don't think he suffers fools. You know, I believe him when he says that she's working hard and wants it and is committed and all the rest of it. I do believe him, but I also just think she's fundamentally just a way less good tennis player
than
Serena Williams.
Yeah, she's starting from quite far back now, isn't she? And yes, Bouchard wasn't bad, but Serena was really good.
Well, what does that tell you about where Serena Williams is? 2-2. Over a not bad opponent that's been number 5 in the world. Wow.
Yeah, she is looking very strong. She's got an interesting draw next. She's got
Jastrzemska,
who was not born when Serena won her first Grand Slam.
Oh, those stats just keep on coming, don't they? She beat Sam Stosur in the first round.
Yeah, and today
she
beat Carla Suarez Navarro.
Yeah.
Seasoned Grand Slam second week, third round, fourth round. So that's a good win.
Yeah. Two more different opponents, though, Suarez Navarro and Serena Williams. You could not wish. I mean, she's.
I mean, not many are close to Serena Williams, but Carla Suarez Navarro is about as far away as you can get.
Yeah. Well, that's going to be interesting. Going to be, I say that whilst thinking that could be 6-0, 6-1.
Yeah, but I do hope we get to see that. Well, actually, I mean, Halep Venus would be.
Yeah, very interesting. I mean, Venus had an on one, didn't she? She came through on the Margaret Court Arena, another match which ended up being played way later in the day than would have been predicted. I think largely because of the tussle that Kei Nishikori got himself embroiled in. First up on that court against 40-year-old Ivo Karlovic.
Next month.
Sorry, Ivo. Yeah. Almost 40-year-old Ivo Karlovic took Kei Nishikori to 5 sets. I mean,
and he'd never won a set off Nishikori, and Nishikori's 2 sets up. So you're thinking, okay, this is done. But he just,
I mean,
and he had 2 break points, and he took them both. Ivo Karlovic in the he took one in the third set to break and win the set, and then he broke again and won the set in the fourth, and both times he broke Nishikori to love, and those were the only break points he had.
I mean, if you're Ivo Karlovic and your game's all about serve, that's as much as can be expected, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
Oh, completely. He was.
But he lost.
He did lose. But it made me believe in final set tiebreaks to 10.
Did it?
I thought it was brilliant, because it felt more significant than a tiebreak to 7. I should probably qualify this with final sets when you're playing 5. I still would like to see the women play on.
Interesting that Ivo Karlovic didn't win the Super Bowl to Maximo tiebreak.
Yes, you think that was ready made for
him. Put your life on it.
Yeah, although I think his tiebreak record is actually less impressive than you'd think it would be. I think it's more or less 50-50. Yeah.
I cannot fathom why that might be.
And Nishikori has this unbelievable fifth yeah. final set record, which I've always thought was just because he gets himself in situations he shouldn't be in.
Oh, Matt, you've led me there. Situations a player shouldn't be in. Sasha Zverev, discuss.
Yes. He's going to get a telling off from Ivan Lendl tonight, isn't he?
He's going to get the hairdryer treatment.
Yeah, it was great fun being in the radio room where I am, because I'm sat on what is apparently called French Row, where I'm surrounded
they
by...
put you on French Row.
I'm surrounded by French radio journalists giving their updates.
And there are a lot of them,
There's
aren't
a
there?
Lot of
French
them.
Radio is a big thing. They send a lot of travelling journalists for... You know, for the UK, who have overall one of the biggest travelling media contingents of any nationality, you know, it's only BBC Radio yeah. that send people,
and
but for the French.
And that's who I'm with as well. So I'm with the BBC and the French. And, of course, we've got the situation where the French, they've seen Simon lose, they've seen Cornet
Alex
lose.
Alex Bolt with great tennis, questionable hair.
So they're urging on Shardy to make this comeback.
Shardy, to be clear, so Sasha Zverev is cruising. We're all thinking, yes, Sasha, yes, you are getting us back on track. We can see our...
We can be done in an hour and a half, comfortably.
We can see our beds calling. We can see our 8 hours sleep losing. Thank you very much. You heard our prayers. And then... But I'm also thinking, oh, I told everybody I thought maybe Jeremy Shardy might cause a bit of trouble here, so... Also, my ego is going to take a bit of a bruising, but fundamentally, I don't really care because I'm going to get 8 hours sleep. And then all of a sudden,
Shardy just starts making everything, literally everything, and he's on this. He's on the comeback charge.
So was it all about Shardy then?
I must say, a lot of it was. It's very. I was keeping one eye on it and watching other things, doing other things. But whenever I looked up, Shardy seemed to be, you know, making contender for shot of the tournament.
How annoyed must Zverev have been?
Very. We had the situation in the radio room where all the French journalists were just willing Shardy on. All the British journalists were thinking, oh, come on, Zverev. Conta's on and we want to start commentating on that. So Anglo-French relations...
Took a dip
today.
At a time when, you know, things aren't brilliant.
And then, of course, Shardy does that classic thing of getting it into a fifth... And then just completely flopping in the fifth set.
Yeah,
and
he did a Benoit Paire.
He did. Exactly. Benoit Paire did the exact same thing a couple of nights ago.
Courtney Nguyen, a colleague of ours, tweeted a few nights ago during that Benoit Paire-Dominic Thiem match, when I think everybody knew that Benoit Paire's struggle would ultimately be in vain, or suspected. So she said, it's 2:07 a.m. Do you know where your match point is? No, we don't. And it is 1:23 a.m. and it is 6-4 Garbina Muguruza first set and 1-1 in the second. There is a, I would call that a smattering of human beings in the crowd on the Margaret Court Arena, and good on them.
Well, there were rumours that this would move to court 3. Which was
well, I believe
infested.
It was. I believe those were more than rumours. Okay. I believe that the organisation planned to do
yeah.
so. They had,
people were out on court.
They had started the chain of events in order to make that happen, and it was unable to happen due to seagull feces.
Yes, too much excrement.
there were insufficient staff, presumably children with towels,
yes.
left on site to clear the. Seagull feces that collects on tennis courts overnight. So
it was back to Margaret Court Arena.
So back to plan A, yeah. which was a post-midnight start on the Margaret Court Arena. And I have to say, I've been watching in and out, David is busy commentating on this like the absolute trooper that he is, beard and all. I have to say, from what I've seen... Blooming good level of tennis, considering the time of day and the. I know it's their job to maintain focus through extraordinary circumstances, but this is the latest ever start at the Australian Open, and they're producing blooming good tennis.
And of course,
in tough times.
And this was a match that last time they played at a Slam went almost 3.5 hours. So
I was courtside for that match. It was about 100 degrees.
4 o'clock in the morning.
Don't say it. That's Novak Djokovic being called to the main interview room. What will he have to say, Matt, on the basis of what you saw of his match against Songa, a straight sets victory? Not a straightforward victory, but equally not one that ever had a flavour of Djokovic not winning.
No, I must say, amongst all my poor predictions this tournament, I did say before the match, I reckon Djokovic will shut this down and actually not turn it into a match that's going on in the small hours. And he broke serve, I think, in the second or third game, very early on. Gave it back, but he established that lead. And once he had the first set, his record from one set up is so strong. And there was a moment in the second set where you thought Songa might be about to
make it
a real match.
Room two.
That's a blow, isn't it?
Someone was in room 6A today. I didn't know that existed.
Oh, who was it?
I think it might have been Jemstremska.
Oh dear.
Yeah.
Is that in the basement?
Anyway, yes, Djokovic, I think pretty impressive tonight. What's going on here?
Somebody's like got a dustpan and brush at the feet of Joe Konta on Margaret Court. I mean, we are in bonkers times, as you say. I mean, is there any other sport where the off season is 3 weeks long and we're all here pretty much every night
it never ends.
The off time during a tournament is about, okay, so play starts 11 a.m, it's 1:30, let's say we finish at 2, which is probably a generous estimate. There are going to be 9 hours during which tennis won't be played. I'll be sleeping for all of those. What else happened today, Matt? What else happened? Thiem retired.
Dominic Thiem, yeah, he's in a bad way, Dominic Thiem.
How bad a way?
Well, he said he's really not sure what it is. He's had a cold for a few weeks and his whole body hurt today. And
sort of a like a glandular fever type
perhaps.
Thing?
Perhaps. He said, I don't want to put a label on it because he doesn't know what it is. He needs to go back and
He needs to come on the tennis podcast where we make medical diagnoses on the basis of absolutely no expertise whatsoever.
Yes, and there was, because he looked, something was up with him right from the start, and then he smashed
right from the start of the swing, really.
Yeah, and I was perhaps a bit overly positive about Dominic Thiem last year. I thought he'd perhaps turned a bit of a corner on hard courts. I thought he played so well.
That match
at the US Open.
Evidence enough.
And even the one before against Kevin Anderson when he beat, you know, that was such a... He showed such better intent on hard courts in that match. But I don't know, he's just... Maybe it's because he's just not been feeling well and we should cut him a bit of slack. But he seems to have gone back to playing clay court tennis on a hard court and it's just not working. Another result today, Denis Shapovalov won and has got to that third round.
He has. And he's got there pretty handily, pretty quietly.
Yes, and without dropping a set.
Yeah.
And did you see his press conference or
I
read
did not
his press conference?
Tell me.
It was almost existential. He was going on about how...
Vibrations?
He was going on about how good he feels, how proud he feels of himself. He thinks he's a sort of slightly different player, more mature player this year. He made the point that he didn't play Brisbane, he just played Auckland, he's scheduling smarter.
Well, that's pleasing to hear for sure. And just the recognition of the scheduling having potentially been a factor is big.
And he described his own tennis today as exceptional. Another exceptional match was pretty much the first line of his press conference.
Wow, Zverev and his perfect body, Shapovalov and his exceptional tennis.
Yeah.
Wow. We all need to think more of ourselves.
I definitely do.
Hey, you're on the tennis podcast. We've ousted David.
Yes.
he's in a bunker somewhere. He doesn't know what's going on. Except that Joe Konta is 2-1, second set.
The scoreboard doesn't seem to be moving.
Worryingly has the feel of a third set bolter breaker. But let's not think that far ahead. Naomi Osaka won extremely handily.
And she plays Su Wei She.
Ooh.
I saw them play at the Surbiton Challenger a few years ago, 2015.
Now there's a tennis van, folks.
Tennis nerdism right there. And
well, I've just seen a very, very demoralised Barry Flatman of the Sunday Times walk past us. Dear, oh dear. Wow, that is a demoralised, tired walk, if ever there was one. Sorry, back to the Surbiton Challenger.
Yes, I can't actually remember a huge amount about it, so now I've brought it up, I might move on from it, but...
This is what happens when David's not here, folks. Yeah. What else happened, Carolina? Pliskova won. She, bizarrely, she dropped the first set to Madison Brengel, who I think got to the fourth round here a few years ago, and I only remember that because it was the year that we hugged a koala together. Which
and it's Animals Day tomorrow, isn't it?
It's Animals Day tomorrow, Matt, but at 10:30 a.m.,
Which is today.
Which is in 9 hours' time, and we're still, if scheduling prevents me from cuddling a koala tomorrow,
it could be
a grumpy podcast. Yeah, watch this space.
Another interesting stat on the women's draw is it's the first time since Wimbledon 2009 that the top eight seeds have reached the third round.
Wimbledon 2009, so close to 10 years ago.
So that whole social media craze at the moment, which is the 10-year challenge, 2009, 2019, the seeds are back.
No, all I know of the 10-year challenge is Mariah Carey tweeted today that age is... I don't recognise age as a thing. She simply... You know how we were talking yesterday about constructed realities?
Yes.
Well, Mariah Carey doesn't consider age to be a feature of... A time. She doesn't consider time to be a feature of her life. Yeah. Other results today. Hyung Chung, semi-finalist of last year. He lost to Pierre Hugues-Bert, who you saw in the living flesh at the Davis Cup final in Lille last year and tipped us off that, you know, singles results might not be far on his horizon.
I'm low-key sort of invested in
not wanting to put your neck on the line, invested in Pierre Hugues-Bert.
I'm not putting my neck on the line ever again after Kuzmova. But yeah, we beat Thiem in Doha, beat Querrey here, Chung here. And it'd be nice if... I mean, obviously, he's one of the best doubles players in the world, but it would be nice if he could transfer that to the singles, because he's got a nice game. And I really wanted to know whether he was going to play that decisive rubber in the Davis Cup final. It didn't matter in the end, because...
Will we ever know?
I don't know. Maybe I should go to press and ask him.
Yeah.
That's a challenge for...
Yeah, maybe
Saturday.
Not if he loses the next match, but you know.
And he's got Raonic next, so...
Watch this space. the space at the moment, by the way, in... soon to be out-of-date tennis news, is that it's still 2-1. Muguruza serving 1-2 advantage. David Law is having a whale of a time in the commentary box.
And another winner today was Borna Coric, who I did speak to today.
Oh.
And I spoke to him mainly about tennis balls and the new ball here this year.
Which is, it's starting to be a thing.
It is a thing. Because, I mean, read about it in my blog, but...
Read the blog, folks.
I'll give you a little overview now in that Borna Coric is a big fan and thinks they really suit his game. They're heavier and slower, and he thinks that's good for him. And incidentally, he'd never won a match at the Australian Open before. Now he's won two.
Is that really true?
I think he's in a better place anyway, but,
blimey,
you know, perhaps the conditions are helping him. And Luca Puy had never won a match before, and he's into the third round. But a lot of other players are really not keen on the balls. But the interesting thing Borna Coric said was he wants consistency. He wants the same ball used pretty much.
I think a lot of people would just assume is the case.
He said he'd happily use a ball that he didn't like as long as they used it all the time, because then he'd get used to it.
Is this just the men's ball, or is this the ball for both the men's and the women's?
The ball that they're using, I believe...
For both.
Throughout the Australian Open is a Dunlop ball. And it was Wilson last year.
I suspect that's not a story that'll end there. Watch this space, folks.
Yeah, because
Matt
most
will get nerdy news and info on tennis balls on a daily basis. I'm going to run through the order of play for tomorrow, unless there's any other business from today you'd like to pick up on, Matt.
I think that is pretty much it.
So, very quick rundown. Barty against Sakari first up. And apparently we're all pronouncing Maria Sakari's name wrong. I just don't know I know that we're doing it wrong. I just don't know how we should be doing it right. We'll get to the bottom of it and we'll let you know, particularly if she wins tomorrow. Taylor Fritz against Roger Federer. Maria Sharapova against Caroline Wozniacki. Third round at the Australian Open. Incredible. Night session, Alex de Minaur against Rafael Nadal. I spoke to Carlos Moyer earlier, who confirmed that Rafael Nadal has changed his service motion, and it is in order to shorten matches, to try and get the job done more quickly, try and be more aggressive. And then it is Kay Birrell. What is Birrell? What is Australian wildcard Birrell's first name beginning with K? Matt, help me out here. I'm going to click. She's taking on Angelique Kerber. Kimberly Birrell.
Kimberly.
Never
yes.
in doubt. Kimberly Birrell. Margaret Kourtarina is Tsitsipas against Basilashvili.
I'm very excited for that. But disappointed that it's on at the same time as Sakari, both of them on courts where there's no ground pass holders. Just feels like, I know they're good matches and you want to give them the stage, but it just feels like they've slightly misjudged the sort of atmosphere around those matches. They've added so much, and it would be nice if at least one of them was later or on the Melbourne Arena, where you get some ground pass holders. But anyway, rant over.
Don't disagree at all. And I also feel the same hang on, I'm going to hold fire on that. Where is Grigor Dimitrov? We'll get to him. We'll get to Grigor. Anisimova against Sabalenka is next up on the Margaret Court Arena. Yes, please.
Yes,
that
please.
Sounds.
I might just camp out there.
Absolutely
day.
Great, doesn't it? Stevens against Martic. And then night session is Daniel Collins, Caroline Garcia, and then Cilic against Verdasco. Melbourne Arena, which once was the Hisense Arena. I can't stop calling it the Hisense Arena, because Melbourne Arena, just, I feel like that could be anywhere.
Yeah.
But except in Melbourne. Burdick against Schwartzman.
Yes.
That's a thing.
I have Schwartzman in the quarterfinals, but with every passing second, I'm beginning to think Thomas Burdick might win the tournament.
Regret, yes.
So much regret.
How did I not see the charge of Thomas Burdick coming? Sasnovic against Pavlyuchenkova. Here he is, Grigor Dimitrov against Thomas Fabiano. Now, I'm pleased that is on a grounds pass holders court, because what I saw when Grigor Dimitrov won on court three the other night, and the atmosphere and the Bulgarian fans was quite something. So I'm pleased that they'll be able to get in to watch him. Kvitova against Bencic, last up. Yes, please.
Yeah.
Plenty else to see. Tiafoe against Seppi. That third round match to be played second on court number three tomorrow. And that, I think, is where we should wrap up it big here, because we've had a few people get in touch with us about our conversation about Francis Tiafoe yesterday and suggest that we didn't give him enough credit for that victory over Anderson, or didn't give him enough credit in general. And hey, that could be true. But to set the record straight, we're big fans of Francis Tiafoe. We just, with our very limited technical knowledge of tennis, have had worries about his technique, because it is a really unorthodox technique.
Yeah, and I think it's okay to be concerned about that. I think if you look at the players who are at the top of the game, their technique tends to be pretty clean.
Yeah.
And I think that is going to be an issue for him coming sorting out that forehand.
Absolutely. I'm not rowing back on anything we said last night. I'm just,
But he's got so many other attributes.
Exactly. Let's leave you with the words of Mary Grillo, who has texted us in enigmatic fashion, or to be clear, texted David Law, who remained in the bunker. She has said, on the subject of Francis Tiafoe, incidentally, she started this text by saying she can't wait to meet Grad Matt.
Oh,
but on the subject of Francis Tiafoe, I saw her earlier, Matt. She was just strolling around in sort of 40 degree heat, 100% humidity, wearing a bomber jacket, looking like the coolest human being I've ever bloody seen. I just thought, as long as I live, I'm never going to achieve even a fraction of that cool. And I felt at once just bursting with happiness and sadness. Anyway, on the subject of Francis Tiafoe, she said, a peek into his stroke production, which is what we've been talking about, she said, one of his coaches explained to her the kid had no racket of his own for years. So he had borrowed demo frames in the pro shop just to, his father was a janitor at the local tennis club. His parents were immigrants to the United States from Sierra Leone. His dad was his twin brother, who's called Franklin. Their dad was a janitor at the local club, and they used to be able to play there as a result. So she says, Francis would borrow demo frames from the pro shop or pull discarded rackets out of garbage bins, accommodating his strokes and grips to the way each played. If his hand skills ever catch up to his first step and enthusiasm, he could get real good. He's still a better athlete than he is a tennis player, which I think is probably a pithier...
Yes, that's what we were saying.
That's what we were saying, except Mary Grillo has said it better.
Much better.
She said, it's a pity he wasn't taught better at an early age. Retrofitting stroke production is difficult. Tearing down and starting over is not easy either, but he's a good kid with a big engine, and he plays his third round match tomorrow on court number 3, which is... our favourite court at the Australian Open,
Very much so.
That is one of the many places to be as we leave you now. It is 2-3, 40-30, Garbiñe Muguruza. It is 1:41 a.m. Do you know, Matt Roberts, where your match point is? Because I certainly don't. And I'm sure a despairing David Law in absentia doesn't either. We've been the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph. We will get Simon Briggs on at some stage, hopefully very soon. We tried to get him on today, but he genuinely is working so hard that he's unable to. But we will get him on. We'll get his views. He's written plenty of interesting stuff in The Telegraph. Check that out. We've been the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph. Our executive producer is tennisballs.com. And our mascot is Rio with a Y, who is a wonderful dog. And we'll see you tomorrow or today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.